I do have a 4S. I started in July of last year with the iPhone, having had no previous anything experience. July 15th, I got my first one. It was an iPhone 4. I migrated to the i4S. I'll tell you the thing that I think I still like the most, and this is really hokey, I know. I, for the first time in my life, was able to take a phone out of its box. I got it in the mail. I took it out of its box. I turned it on. I hit the home button 3 times, and VoiceOver came on, and I set it up completely independently. If nobody has touched that iPhone, and you get it directly from, you know, wherever, AT&T, Apple, whatever.
Okay, I get
it. This is with the new
4S. Yep.
If you either hit the home button 3 times, or you leave it on and you don't touch it at all, VoiceOver comes on automatically. The things I like about the 4S, you don't have to use iTunes anymore very much, which I really like because I don't, I use iTunes, I'm able to use iTunes, but I don't like it. I find it very clunky, particularly in Windows because I don't have a Mac. I like the new iCloud, which allows you to back up without using iTunes. I like, they have a Wi-Fi sync now where if you have a Wi-Fi connection in your house, and you've got your iPhone connected to your Wi-Fi, you know, you can update automatically. There is an update already to iOS 5, which is the software. The 4S is the firmware. It's the phone itself, which is available on for iPhone 3GSs and up. So you can have a lot of the new features, even if you don't have an iPhone 4S. Even if you have an older one, an older iPhone, I was able to update that without using my computer at all. I literally just accepted the update, it installed, my phone restarted, and I was updated.
I updated mine to the new operating system, the 4. What I would be interested in is the difference between that and the actual new hardware, the 4S. I mean, I know
the
one difference is the Siri.
Yeah.
So you have the Siri.
We have Siri. Siri, for people who may not know, is a voice recognition software, which is still in beta, which allows you to speak to the phone, and it will do things like send messages for you or dial phone numbers or look up the time or tell you what time it is in Australia. I wish you could surf the web with it, too. But the hardware is the same as the hardware for the Verizon version of the iPhone 4. There was an AT&T version, which is a GSM, that's the network that it's on, and there's a Verizon version, which is on CDMA. The 4S hardware now combines those, so now they're the same. The phone itself, the hardware, Maria, is the same configuration as the Verizon model. Four. So it looks the same. The difference is the processor is faster. There's more memory. What am I missing, you guys?
The camera.
The camera's better.
The camera is better.
That's right, the
camera. That's what I'm interested in.
You
really
can't
knowing
put
about.
Siri on an iPhone 4.
No. Siri is only for the... And I suspect that's because of memory and processor speed and so forth.
Yes, it has a dual-core processor, I believe.
And as I say, the camera's better. I mean, you can do some interesting things with it, like with the camera. If you're within 3 to 5 feet, you can sometimes get it to recognize that there's... If you can get it to say large face, you can actually take somebody's picture. Sadly, I'm disappointed. I have not had much increased results with either OCR apps or barcode scanning apps. I have not found them much better.
Have you found any decreased results? Because I find that the Looktel Money Reader doesn't seem to work as well with Five software.
I think that has more to do with Looktel.
There was an update that...
The Looktel Money Reader is probably the best couple of bucks I've ever spent in my life. What it allows you to do is it identifies currency for you. But you look it up under Looktel in the App Store.
It's capital LOOK, capital TEL.
OCR app, optical character recognition, scanning apps that will allow you to scan and get text.
I'm Judy from Connecticut, and I have the Looktel. When we first got it installed, all it would do was beep. It would show the number to a sighted person of the money, but it would just have different beeps. And then I tried it 2 weeks later, and it worked beautifully. It said the name of the money as it was supposed to. And now all it's doing is this weird beeping again.
Is the mute switch turned to mute on your phone?
Oh, it could have been at the time.
Because the way it works is that if the mute switch is switched to mute,
It doesn't vocalize the results. If it's unmuted, it does.
And the other thing is it is sensitive to lighting. I have found that I have taken a bill out and put it, you know, where I think the phone should recognize it, and it won't. And then if I go to another room, which must have better lighting, it will.
And remember which camera you're going to use. Remember you're going to use the camera that's on the back of the phone. No, this is for any 3GS and up. The first iPhone that had speech, that had voiceover, and has these features we're talking about, a lot of them, is the 3GS. But you can't get a 3G anymore, I don't think, unless you get it on eBay or something. And the camera that you use for the money reader, you'll know it because if you look at your phone, with the home button at the bottom, the opposite side of the phone from the home button, on the top right-hand side, you'll feel a little, like, circle. That's the camera.
When it comes to the Looktel, one interesting thing is that, remember, if you have a 3GS, there's no flash.
Right.
So lighting is a lot more critical. Like with me and Nina, we actually had a bill one time that we tried it with hers, 3GS, and it couldn't read until we turned the room lights on. But mine read it with the light off.
So it may be dependent upon the camera that's on your phone.
I actually ended up downloading again that iNote, EYE Note, that I tried before and thought it was awful. But I downloaded it and found that now, at least on my phone, it's better than the Looktel is.
That's the one that the government created in response to the effort, you know, the complaints about inaccessible currency.
And the disadvantage to it is that you have to hit the take picture button to take a picture of the money before it'll read it, whereas the Looktel, you just held it near it, it would read it.
Yeah.
After I got my phone activated, I could find nothing that I could listen to that would tell me how to use the machine. I mean, once I got VoiceOver activated, it would tell me something. Once I got into the contact section, I almost discovered by accident that three fingers scrolled up or down.
If you go into settings, general, accessibility, and voiceover, there's a part at the end called voiceover practice.
Oh.
And it will allow you to do the different gestures, and without doing anything to the phone, it will tell you what they do.
And you will not turn voiceover off. A lot of people don't click on voiceover because they think they're going to turn it off.
But you don't.
You don't.
There is tons of information. There are tons of podcasts. There's a whole manual on VoiceOver. And if you go to the ViBug webpage, we have collected an entire dossier of information with podcast links and where you can listen with the iPhone, the manuals.
And it's Anna Dressner's book called Getting Started
That's
with
in
the
there,
iPhone.
Yep.
And where is that?
It's from the National Braille Press.
It's
also listed on our ViBug page.
It is. It's listed on the ViBug page.
It's a Daisy book, but I used that thing probably for a couple of months after I got the iPhone as a resource. It's wonderful.
Daisy book means it's an audio book that you can listen to. You can also get it in a Word format.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it in various different formats.
And that's Getting Started
with the iPhone. It costs, I think, $12. You get it from National Braille Press. You can order it online. You can call them at 617-266-6160. And their extension for customer service is 20.
And their website is nbp.org
or braille.com. Mm. That's one thing. If you're used to a Windows environment, and you're used to a Windows, you know, where you get help, when you get help from your screen reader and all that, this is very different.
I have a question about Siri. Personally, I'm not so interested in it, but I have students that can, for one or other reasons, sometimes brain injury, not learn to type. There's one, for instance, that now has a Siri, but I was running into trouble with it, and I was wondering if you or other 4S users have tried it, and because when things got interactive, I would say something like mail, Amy rule, and then it would ask what do you want to say, and then from then on I sometimes it got hung up or something. Is that something just me because I don't know it, or has anybody
that happened to me where I tried to make a phone call and Siri said I'm going to call that number, and then nothing ever happened. It didn't go to the next step.
One thing is that sometimes with some commands you have to confirm it. especially mm-hmm. like when you make an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
It'll say, I've set up an appointment for blah, blah, blah. Then you have to press the button again and say, confirm, and it actually does it then.
Uh-huh.
Or, for example, sending a message. It took me a while. Like, I send messages to people all the time. One thing that I like about the new iOS 5 software is if you're sending a message, a text message, to somebody with an iPhone, it's free now. They have an iPhone and you have an iPhone, it's free.
Because it's an instant message.
And they automatically know to switch instead of just to a text message to an iMessage. So I was trying to send, so I'd say, send a message to Sheila, and my daughter's last name. And they would say, send a message. And they'd say, what do you want to say? And I'd say what I want to say. And then it wouldn't do anything.
Yeah.
And then I realized I have to say yes to make it send the message.
Can you demonstrate it?
Yes.
Sure, hold on. Okay, the rotor is this area that has different things in it so that it allows, depending upon where you are, it allows you to perform different actions. And I put the speech
in the rotor.
What I did was, if you think about a rotor, using the rotor as if you're turning a knob. So you put two fingers on the screen, slightly apart, and then you turn it as if you're turning a dial. You put your fingers on the screen, anywhere on the screen, and you turn as if you're turning a dial. And that will go from the different controls that you've set up in your rotor, and I went to the speech rate. That's what I went to. Okay.
And then you flick up or down.
And then I flick up or down.
Finger.
Flicking is like, and the best way I can think of with flicking, like say you want to take a piece of dust or lint or something, you know, you just sort of flick it off with your finger. So you flick, you just very lightly flick, it will move it down or up, depending, it'll increase or decrease the speed. That also happens with things like languages, you know, when you have edit commands that are available, when you want to listen, you know, move by character or by word, or when you want to change your typing mode. Yeah.
The typing mode, the character, and the word are default. Did you add the speed of the speech to yours? Is there a way to do that?
Yep.
So can you tell us how to
change? And we'll tell you that in a second. Okay. Okay, so I'm in the message, so I'm going to say... Oh, see, now it just did it. Sometimes it will do that. I hit the home button and I held it in, so it made the beep, but then it said dismiss Siri, which is kind of stupid, because that's not what I wanted. Send a message to Nora Nagel. Now, in this room, it may not do it so well, so let me see.
What can I help you with?
Oh, see, it didn't do it. Okay. See, it's not working right. And it should. And when it works, really, when it works,
it's great.
If you have problems like that, power the phone off and power
yes,
the phone on.
Yes, and it will work better.
But the other flaw to the system, the messages,
yep.
My brother's a massive Mac head for years.
Yep.
The messages to iPhones,
yep.
You have to log in the phone as an iPhone message. If not, if you can see, the message will go to them as green. When it's an iPhone to another iPhone, mm-hmm. It's supposed to be blue. If you do not make that marker within your contacts, it's not a free message if you have a data plan.
Okay.
So the message has to come through, receiving and sent as blue. Once it's blue, unlimited messaging to all iPhones.
Right.
Or iPads or...
But the problem is you can't tell.
Some do, some don't. I'm coming across. Because I had issues with mine for a month, and my brother grabbed it. 10 minutes later, I was A-OK. Do you want me to try it, Amy?
Yeah, why don't you try it? Since you haven't tried it yet, and I have. It also works better on a Wi-Fi than on 3G.
I'm on the home screen, and I'm going to hold the home button down to activate Siri, and you'll hear a beep, and then I'll try the command. Text Amy Rule, I hope you can get this working, !! Smile.
Okay.
Now it read the message back, and I hit the send.
Now I'm booting my phone up, so...
Okay.
What can I help with? Testing to my host. Okay, I to Amy Rule. Okay, I send it.
So she
to
sent
Amy
it.
Rule. Listen, button. Double tap and then speak to me, Siri.
Will I need a jacket tomorrow?
You said, will I need a jacket tomorrow? The low temperature will be 52 degrees on.
That's awesome.
Wow. Now, Micah, how did you get it to make the phone so loud?
He's got a portable speaker. I work overnight, so my sleep schedule is nuts. So I wanted to make sure I got up in time, because before we came here, we drove a friend to the airport and so forth, so I wanted to get up at 6 o'clock. So I just said to Siri, set an alarm for 6 o'clock. And it sets it. The Reminders app, like I go to a particular grocery store, so I put in my home address, and then I put in the grocery store, and so I will send a reminder to myself. Again, I did it through Siri, and I said, when I get to the Stop and Shop, remind me to buy and then I listed the things I wanted to buy. And when I pulled into the Stop and Shop parking lot, it reminded me.
Wow.
You have to put in your address, and you have to add, like, the store to your contacts.
Okay, so as long as it's in your contacts.
Yeah. And you've got to have, the, like, the name, and you've got to call it by the correct name and stuff.
Okay.
As long as you've got their full address in there, you have to have the address in there. Because it's using GPS.
Right. Discussion I've seen of additional voices, is that only for the 4S phone?
Yes. Well, no. You mean the premium voices?
Yeah.
That's an iOS 5 feature.
So how do you get to those, or how do you access those?
I think it's under accessibility and voiceover, but the trick is that you need to have the phone plugged in and connected to Wi-Fi. And then it will automatically download the premium voice. And then once it's downloaded, it will switch to it. I actually didn't like it as well, so I switched back to it. What happens is, initially, you won't see it under voiceover until the voice shows up. And then you'll see something that says something like compact voice on or compact voice off.
Oh.
And it's a toggle.
So I go into voiceover, and then what do I do?
You go to settings, general, accessibility, voiceover. And then in the voiceover section, you'll see a bunch of different things. And one of them will be compact voice, and it will either tell you it's on or off. And whatever if you double tap it and it's on, it will go off. If you double tap it and it's off, it will go on. And it will just stay that way until you change it again.
Great.
So that is the premium voice? The compact?
No, the compact voice is
the old voice.
Voice.
And that's what I turned on also, because I don't like the other ones.
Right. I didn't care for the premium voice myself.
Yes,
so.
What do the premium voices? One voice, different voices? What lashes?
It's one voice. Okay, and let me explain something else. I have several different voices on my phone. There are several different English voices that you can put in: British English, an Australian English, a Irish English, a South African English, and a U.S. English. And each of them has both a compact voice, which is the regular voice you're used to if you have been upgraded, and then there's the premium voice. You can only have one premium voice on your system. Whatever your default settings are, whether it's U.S. English or whatever, that's what you get for a premium voice. You can only download one premium voice at a time. And you can change your premium voice if you want to a different English version, say. But then you have to change all your regional settings, and that will change how your time comes up and your dates are stated, etc. I got Mega's message, by the way. I just got a little notification that it said... So that's how it works. There are lots of things. There are tons of new things. And Kevin Chow did a couple of podcasts with Robert Carter, Tech Doctor podcast. The links to those are in that section on Apple on the Vibug page. And he did extensive podcasts, and he went through almost every new feature of and change in VoiceOver, and they're really worth listening to. And one of the nice ones is, that was my little notification. I changed the tone. You might have heard it, a bell kind of sound.
Yeah.
I changed my notification because three of my family members have iPhones. So we were all getting a little, same tone. And it got very confusing as to whose iPhone was going off. And usually it wasn't mine, and I got very disappointed. So I decided I changed mine to the bell. So that just tells me I have new text messages.
Anyway, so how do you go about doing that?
It's in the
settings
and sounds. And if you go into the sounds, you can change the tone for different things.
Oh. It's very customizable now. It's amazing what's in that settings section.
You couldn't do that before?
You could not change the text message tone, I don't think, or you could change the ringtone. That was all.
You can change. Yeah, you can change the text. Right.
I see.
I believe so, and
yeah,
you can.
Yeah,
I think you can change a number of the alerts.
And there's a lot more choices.
Is that just with the newest one? Some of the changes you could make. Most of them are new, but the one for the text tone for your messages, I did way back before. before iOS 5.
Really, I couldn't, okay. I couldn't do that.
I did that. But
it
I did that.
Before you could change it, but you couldn't add your own to it.
No, you couldn't add your own.
Now you can.
No, now you can add your own. I'm not that ambitious. I'm too lazy. I'll just pick from what they've got. Screen curtain. If you don't want people to see what you're doing, or you want to save battery power and you're not using any vision on the phone, you can turn on the screen curtain, and that will darken the screen. Yes. It also saves on battery life. Sure. Speaking of battery life, there have been documented issues with people having trouble with battery life where it decreases a lot. Mm-hmm. There are lots of reasons that can happen, one of which is if you have what they call push notifications, so that when a lot of apps ask you, will you allow push notifications? That means if there's some information they want to get to you, that they will automatically send it. If you turn those on, you're going to decrease your battery life because, you know, because they're on, they're monitoring.
Yeah.
They have, that's one of the reasons why they did the update to the iOS 5 yesterday or the day before. That has helped with battery life. I still think there are some issues, but that has helped, at least on my phone.
So the app switcher is, if you press the home button twice right in a row, it brings up an app called the app switcher. The app switcher is a place that stores apps that are running in the background. So every time you open something, if you open your email and then you open the phone and then you open the weather app or whatever, all those things continue to use some energy and to run in the background or at least be readily available.
Think of it as a Windows taskbar.
Exactly. So if you want to remove those, which is a good idea once in a while because it can save battery life, you go into the app switcher. The way I do it is I double tap and then hold on the second tap. I hold it for about a second and it says editing. Then I find the only way that I can remove apps is to triple finger flick to the left until I get to the last page, and it'll say page 5 of 5 or whatever. Then I go to the first app that I can find there. It'll say double click to remove. I double click it. I keep doing that until I've run out of apps, and it'll say the app switcher is empty. I click double click on dismiss app switcher.
You know, Jerry, I don't do that.
The three finger
flick at all. You can just start with one app and just keep tapping, and it will get.
Exactly.
Mecca, you've got a phone with a speaker. Can you demonstrate it?
Sure.
Yeah, because what I find is if I do that, it tries to open it.
You have to do the double tap and hold,
right,
which means
right.
You double tap and keep your finger down. Let's have Mecca demonstrate it.
So I'm on the home screen.
Page 1 of 11. Adjustable.
So I'm going to double tap.
Swipe down to adjust the value.
Double tap the home button.
App switcher. Safari. Double tap to open.
And within the app switcher, if you want to open an app, you can. So let's say you just went to something a few apps ago and you want to get back to it. So I'm just now going to flick right and it will cycle through the apps that I have.
Messages. Set phone. Tweet list.
And then if I do a three finger left swipe, it'll move to the next page of apps.
Page 4 of 16. Dismiss app switch. Page out. Foursquare. Facebook. 11 new items.
So,
double tap to open.
Say you wanted to remove some of these, so you double tap right here and hold.
Editing apps.
And it will say editing apps. And then we were on Facebook, so if I just double tap again.
Viewer.
And I can remove this one.
Find Get Blue. Find Friends. Get Blue.
Yeah.
441.
But they're not being removed from your...
You're just closing it. And Mecca has speak hints off. Mm-hmm. And because he has speak hints off, it's not saying what it would on it. If you had speak hints on, which I would recommend for beginners, it would say, double tap to remove from switcher. And
dismiss then app
switcher. Uh-huh.
Double tap to dismiss the app switcher.
And then you can double tap to dismiss it or just press the home button. Mm-hmm. You'll get back to your home screen.
Foursquare. Dismiss app Foursquare. Phone.
And by the way, one thing, you don't have to be on the icon. Once you've removed one and it's in that removing mode, you can double tap anywhere on the screen and it'll just remove the next one. So
okay.
I do that all the time.
Uh-huh.
I'll just double tap on the screen
right.
And then remove it. At the end of every day, no matter how much I've used my iPhone, I will go in and take everything out of the app switcher. And then dismiss it.
Amy, there's no way to close them all at once.
No.
Right, everything in the app.
Apple has done a lot, and I think it's good to commend them for the good things that they've done. So when iOS 5 came out and I was able to, as I said to people who were here at the beginning, like just take it out of the box and use it, I wrote them thanking them. I also write them when I have complaints, and I will tell them, and I have written to them and said, please give us a gesture where we can just take everything out all at once. So if you have suggestions, if things aren't working for you, and you want things to change, I think that's how the push center notifications changed. In the old days, you had to, if you got a push notification from somebody, like I have an app on my phone called AP Mobile. So if there's breaking news, it will send me push notifications. It will tell me that there's a breaking news thing, and I can... Well, it used to, no matter what you were doing, you could be in the middle of sending an email message and the damn thing would pop up, and then you'd have to do something. You'd have to dismiss it, or you'd have to do something before you could continue. Now, you don't have to do that anymore. But you can get to your notification center by, at the top of the screen where the status bar items are, and the status bar items are things like your battery power, whether you're on Wi-Fi or 3G, who your phone carrier is. If you double tap that and then you swipe down with three fingers, that will open the notification center and show you what's in it. And then you can decide to clear the section, you know, that part, whatever part of the notification center has notifications in it, or you can dismiss it, or you can read the stuff.
Amy, is there something you have to do to still get those notifications but have them go to that notification center? In other words, not
there is now a section in the settings called notifications. And you go in there and in all the apps that have notifications available,
right,
you can choose how you want things to work.
Sometimes if you're, say, in a crowded place or an open, very big open space, it doesn't really make sense to try to do a voice command, at least with the phone that I have right now. So I'm wondering how easy and, you know, realistic it is to just be able to use the touchpad to dial, you know, to touch a 10-digit phone number and make that happen quickly, efficiently.
I will say two things, and I always say this to people. If you really want a phone to primarily be just a phone, and you don't care about all the other bells and whistles and lovely things that all of us weird people play with, then don't get the iPhone. I can dial numbers without very much difficulty on the iPhone, and it can be done. But is it as efficient as doing it on with a phone with numbers? No, it's not. So I would say if your primary reason is to want to dial a phone and you want the phone as a phone, the iPhone may not be the phone for you. Having said that, I think there are two things. One is, yes, you can learn to use the keypad. It is laid out spatially the way the keypad is on a regular phone, so it's pretty easy to orient yourself. If they have touch typing, if you have touch typing enabled, I find that also makes it easier to enter in your phone numbers. Two methods for typing on the iPhone.
Oh.
One is what they call standard typing, and that is on by default. What that means is that if you find the letter you want, you have to find the letter, and then you have to tap again to activate that letter. If you're in standard typing, you're not. You have to hit the right letter, and then you hit, you tap again.
Double tap, actually.
Yeah, you double tap. So that's one thing. If you're on
touch typing,
if you switch to touch typing, you leave your finger on the phone until you hit the right letter or number, and when it announces it, you lift your finger, and that enters it. And that makes it a lot easier, I think.
The other thing, too, with phone calls is that in practice, you'll be calling mostly contacts that you have, and you can add them to your favorites.
Yeah.
So you could have a screen with, say, at least 5 or 6 people that you call regularly, and you just double tap their name.
Just going to say that too. I almost never dial the phone anymore.
I've got things in my contacts, and I go to say one of them. Say I go to Steve. How do I get to actually make it call it?
You have to open it. Open that contact.
So I double tap, right?
Right.
Yes.
Yep.
And then what? Because then it's just reading
the thing. Find the number you want. It might be mobile, work, or home, or whatever you might have called it.
Yeah.
Unless if it's in your favorites, it will dial it immediately.
Yeah.
Right.
But one thing you have to know too, like you can also do that from the phone. Right. You can do that from the phone app. You don't have to go into your contacts app to do that. If you have a list of contacts in your phone, you go into the phone app, and from the phone app, there are going to be tabs at the bottom, like little buttons at the bottom that have different parts of the phone app. So with that phone app, you're going to look for your contacts app. And then you can find one of your contacts, double tap it, and then you can, it'll say mobile number or whatever, and whatever numbers you've got in there, you can, you know, you can select that and it will ring the dial the number.
If you have people you call a lot, you put these contacts, like 10 or something, in your favorites, and then you don't have to, you know, do this.
That's the quickest way. In my contacts, I have like 250 contacts. So when I go to that, I double click there, and then it takes me to their page, and I choose the number that I want to call them on. But if it's my son, he's in my favorites, and so I just click his name, and it automatically immediately calls him without going to that second page.
Yes. Yeah.
Can I point out something about going through the contacts list that I found very useful?
The table index?
Yeah, the table index. Okay, the table index is again, one of these things. You hit the table index, and it seems like it does nothing.
Mm-hmm.
The trick is you double tap and hold. And then once you do that, all of a sudden, you can move your finger up and down, and it will go A, B, C, D. It'll go all the different letters. So if you're looking for somebody whose name begins with R, like Maria here, so you would go to the R's, take your finger off the phone, and then when you start flicking right, it would go through the R's, and so that's a quick way to get to at least the part of the alphabet that you want for your 200 contacts.
Actually, it could be even quicker than that. If you just touch the table index, then just swipe up and down, so you get to the letter you want, like say R, then just touch right in the middle of the screen, you're right there.
But see, it's funny, I can't get it to do that. I have to do the double tap and hold thing.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Really?
I do it like this, what's your name?
So that's interesting.
Right. Yeah, I do it the same
way. I did it the way Frank did, and I happened upon it, and what I did by mistake, and I thought my table index was not working, is because I always do three fingers, I was swiping with three fingers. But it's not three fingers. You have to know that you just swipe with one finger when you do that.
I think that's an important point, though, because I, for emailing purposes, I have 1,300 contacts. So that table index saves my butt all the time, because there'd be no way that...
I do not have all of my email contacts in my iPhone. I'm not going to be, I don't want to have that many people in my contacts. So I don't do the contacts that way. I just add them in as I need them. I can add them in on the phone, the iPhone keyboard. I can do that. But I have both a Braille display with a Braille input, and I also have an iPhone Apple keyboard. And when I'm entering contacts, I will do that. It's just a lot faster.
When you call and you want the speech off, you just do the three-finger double tap, which turns the speech off, but not the voiceover. It just, you don't hear the, you know, blah, blah, blah that the voiceover says while you're on the phone.
No, it's a three-finger double tap to mute it, and a three-finger triple tap for the screen.
Right. Screen.
And there's also a two-finger single tap, which just shuts up the phone. That stops the speech. It doesn't mute the phone, the voiceover. It just stops whatever it's saying right now.
It's like hitting the control key.
Yes,
that's right. Wow.
And that's certainly safer, in my opinion, because if you start playing around with turning off speech, you're going to do it sometime when you didn't want to, and you're not going to remember what you did.
I had to use my iPhone to call all 50 states recently, so I started learning some things that I didn't know. One of which is that you can hide the keypad while you're on a call.
Yes,
there's a hide the keypad button that you double tap on. There's also, once you do that, you can find a mute button and some other things that can be useful while you're actually on a call.
Say you call your bank and you don't want you to enter your account number.
Yeah.
If you insert commas into the number as you're entering it, it will put in pauses and then you can put in the number. You have to find a little button that changes it to numbers.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then the comma is there on the bottom row.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know what? I had a different experience. Just so when you're editing the number, when you're in the...
Yes.
What I found is that you put in the phone number, and then I'm pretty sure it's the shift key changes at that moment the 7 and the star into different symbols.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes. What he's talking about is when you're editing the phone number, instead of getting a QWERTY style layout, you get the phone key
style.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's right. And so it changes the star and the 7 into those symbols that you need to add to the...
Other nice feature with iOS 5 on phone calls is to end the call, you can hit the lock button. You don't have to find the button or do the two-finger
double.
I didn't know that.
Oh, really? Yes.
But the lock button.
The lock button is at the top right-hand side, like a little bar. It feels like a bar.
Yeah.
That's the lock button.
Yeah, and it's also called the
sleep-wake
button.
Yeah, I always call it the lock button.
And it doesn't
that ends
lock
the call?
The phone, just
no,
ends the call.
Cool.
It just ends the call.
If you get a call...
No, it's software.
And you hit it, I don't know if it's once or twice... While the phone is ringing, it will send it to voicemail. Do you know, Mick, if it's
twice.
Once or twice?
Twice.
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 And that's good.
Twice will allow you to explore the screen and get the caller's information.
Say you get a call from somebody and your phone rings, and sometimes I'll have my phone ring loud because it's not in the same room I'm in, I've got to run like hell to get it. If the phone is ringing, so you can't hear what VoiceOver said, so you don't know who's calling you, if you have your phone set up this way, you can hit one of the volume buttons. It will stop the phone from ringing, but you can then explore the screen and find out who's calling you.
I also, by the way, use those commas to put in my ID and birth date for the ride if I want to check where my ride is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What if you're making a call and it says, you know, press... 1 for English and 2 for Spanish, and you want Spanish. So you've already made the call in whatever way you make it, whether you use Siri or whether you use your contacts, you're in the call.
If you take the phone away from your face, that's the key. There's a proximity sensor in the iPhone. What that tells the phone is, look, while it's up to your ear, if something touches the phone, ignore it, because you're talking on the phone. So you have to take the phone away from your face and put it flat in your hand, and then hopefully if your phone is working right, you will then all of a sudden see the keyboard.
Okay, it wouldn't let me do it.
You might have to wave your hand sometimes over the phone to try to get it to pay attention.
Yeah, it's a little
and then,
flaky.
Right,
oh, okay.
But then
it is flaky.
But then you will get the keyboard, and then if you have touch typing, you move your finger on the screen till you get to the 2, and then you pick it up and you'll hear the tone entered for 2.
Can I make a suggestion about this though? I think particularly at the beginning, if you're a new user, my suggestion is use headphones. If you're going to be making a call like this, use a set of headphones that allows you to listen privately, because then you don't have to worry about the damn proximity sensor.
Yeah.
You don't have to, and it's just much more relaxing. Until I got comfortable with the phone, that's what I did, and I found it was a much more comforting experience.
The phone stays flat, in other words, so the proximity sensor never comes into play.
It never engages.
Oh, I see.
Right.
So if you use a set of headphones, you can do that, and then the numbers are automatically available to you because the phone's not at your ear,
right.
Mm-hmm. Or it's not at your face.
Yeah.
Does everybody know that you can also voice dial even on older models without Siri?
Yes.
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 How do you do that?
Hold the home button, so it goes beep, 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 then just say call or dial 617 and whatever.
So it's whoever is... your contacts or just numbers?
No, you can dial numbers.
Either way.
You could do it right now and dial my number and my phone.
You can say dial and then the number, or you can say call and the contact.
So you hold down the home button?
Yeah.
Yeah, you hear the beeps. It's going to beep back.
And after it beeps, you let it go.
You let it go.
And you can say call Jerry Barry or mobile. And it would dial my mobile number.
If you were in his contacts.
Right.
Yeah.
The other thing, though, to remember is that in a noisy environment,
it's
very iffy.
Yeah.
So you need to be prepared to, either put something in your favorites or try it again, or something, try to get it to work.
And the proximity sensor, the other thing about the proximity sensor, depending upon the case that you have for your iPhone, I had a case that I absolutely loved, and I ended up sending it back. Because the proximity sensor, we're all sorts of problems on the iPhone.
Well, I've got an Autobox commuter series, and the sleeper awake button is really hard to activate.
Yeah.
Oh, I think if you have headphones in, maybe that's why the end call isn't working.
Oh, we tried it.
You're right, I did have headphones.
Oh,
but I just tried it with.
Yeah, because I did it on mine and it worked.
But when you unplug the headphones, then it ends the call.
A lot of times I'll get a phone call and my phone will be locked. How do I get it quickly enough to be able to get the call? What do I do?
You don't have to unlock the phone. Just double tap with two fingers on the screen.
Oh, really?
Yes. Double tap what?
The screen.
Just the screen.
Just the screen?
Anyways.
I would stay a little bit over to the right. To the right. Because there is a decline button. But I guess if you just double tap, it'll say slide. If you listen to it, it'll say slide to answer or double tap. So it's double tap and it'll answer.
A two-finger double tap.
Yeah, two. I double tap with one finger.
Okay, because you were focused on the answer button.
Yes, because I go to the right of the...
If you use a two-finger double tap, you don't have to
anywhere? Okay. Because I always go to the right of the home button, because that's the answer button, and then I can just use a one finger.
Two finger.
But you should go more towards the middle or the right. Don't go the left.
That's why I use two finger double, because it doesn't matter.
Right.
I just confirmed that lock button does work when I don't have the headphones on.
Does everybody know that there are controls on your headphones that come with the iPhone to change the volume? There's a microphone in there.
They put a call on hold.
You can activate the voice control or voice command. I think you have to hold the center of it.
Right.
Yes. In the box, you're going to get a set of headphones. You're going to get the charger cord, which is actually two pieces. It's a plug, a standard plug with a port, and then there's another cord that goes into that. That's also the cord that you can, that's the cord you charge your iPhone with, and the port to charge it is on the bottom of the iPhone. And you also that's the same cord you use if you want to download things from your computer or hook it up to your computer. And you get your iPhone and you get a lovely print manual.
Amy, has anyone here tried the speed dial? These are the screen protector with some dots on it.
Oh, I have.
So I have it on my phone if anybody wants to see it. There are two versions. One has a whole bunch of dots on it. It has, for example, the 8L QWERTY keyboard all the way across. I put that on and found it to have too many dots. So I got the one with just a few dots that has dots on the F and J. But the reason I mention it, and then it's got a couple others, maybe four or five others, is that down by the home key, there is a dot just diagonal to the right that would be the answer button, very easy to find. And same with the left side, that would be very easy to find the end button or the decline button.
I think screen protectors in general are good, because that way you don't scratch your screen if you happen to get dust, dirt on it or something. But the tactile screen protectors, I think they're okay. They're kind of good for somebody who's brand new. But in all honesty, once you've been using an iPhone for a month or so, in my opinion, they're kind of superfluous. I didn't find them helpful in any way at all.
It is a matter of real personal preference.
Yeah. Okay, a screen protector is something that you put over your phone that covers the screen. It doesn't have any impact on the operation of the screen, except you may have to push slightly harder.
I see.
But it protects the phone.
It's a film.
And there are there are tactile ones that have dots in certain places that you can
get. Oh, I didn't know that.
Frank, if you double tap anywhere... Mm-hmm. To answer, is there also a function if you do want to decline?
Well, if you just want to decline, you could always just hit the lock button.
Lock button. Yeah. Okay. You hit the lock button.
And by the way, two finger double tap while you're in call, so it hangs up on call.
Yes.
Right. I guess everybody here has or is getting in the process of getting an iPhone. If you are, or if you know somebody who really hates the touch screen and wants a real tactile screen, you know, for the phone now, not for other things, but for the phone, I know a lot of people who just want something like the Samsung Haven or something like that. They can then get an iPod Touch, and that does many things that the iPhone does. Of course, you cannot go outside and use the GPS and things like that, because you cannot get a data plan with it. But I have used iPod Touches a lot, and they are great too, and they are of course a lot cheaper. But the iPod Touches, you can Skype, you can do things.
I will just say that the only thing I use a lot is the Sendero GPS, and that does seem to work well. But all that does is tell you where you are. And it will tell you points of interest and so on and so forth, things of that nature. Right. And that is very good. I'll tell you, an app that I like a lot, and I, if I couldn't have any other apps, but this app, I think I would get it. I would just keep the phone for that, and that's the app called Catch the Bus that Nora Nagel had introduced at one time at one of these meetings, and it is a wonderful app for anybody who lives in the Boston metropolitan area, and they have other cities as well.
Is there a way that you could do something similar to, say, what people do in their cars and put in an address and then have it give you walking directions from
respond to that, and that is there are no GPS apps on the market that work as well for a blind person as things like the Trekker Breeze or some of those others. There are a number of them that work pretty well, but they don't work as well as the ones that are really made for the blind, so to speak.
Let me qualify that by saying it all depends on what you needed to do. Like, for instance, the example you just gave, you put an address in and have it tell you what direction to go. There are applications for the iPhone that will do that. Mm-hmm. Having all this accessibility in one package on the iPhone, generally to get that level of accessibility where you have step-by-step instructions to get from point A to point B, and have it tell you what you're passing along the way, you need to run more than one app at the same time.
Two apps at the same time.
Sometimes even three.
And I just wanted to add that the map, just the regular map, is, if you're blind, you obviously you cannot use the map, but you can get directions, and now you can get directions for walking, for bus, and for driving.
Which app is this?
This is the regular maps that comes with the iPhone or iPod.
So you just go into the maps application.
Yeah, and you go to directions, and then you can like type in one address and another address, and then route, and then you just hit the start, which is on the top right, and then you go forward, next, then you can go back,
and
you know,
tell you the steps.
And it tells you the steps. Yeah. It doesn't tell you where you are, but then if you use the Sendero at the same time.
How do you spell Sendero?
S-E-N-D-E-R-O.
S-E-N-D-E-R-O.
Yeah, so if you take that, I often use the Sendero and the maps at the same time.
Yeah.
And that actually works pretty well.
One thing that I did when I went to New Hampshire recently to speak in front of the New Hampshire group for blind computer users is I was on the bus. And I was reading, but I wanted to be able to tell when I was getting close to my bus stop without having to listen to the announcements and so forth. So what I did was I had the Sendero app, and I would just use it to figure out where I was.
Yeah.
And it updated, and I knew when we hit Portsmouth, because I just, I activated it, and it told me exactly where I was, and I knew exactly where I was when I turned into the bus station.
So it tells you what you're passing.
It tells you where you are at a certain point. And it will, for example, if you went outside here, it might say you're at 70 Mass Ave. It might not say 77.
It is working if you want me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is it? Okay, because it wasn't working out in the hallway when I was playing.
From the app store.
Andy, could you have set a reminder?
I could have if I knew the exact address of the bus station, yes.
Okay.
So Sendero's running now.
Nearest cross stream. Look around. Nearest cross stream. Nearest 5 points of interest.
There are much better apps for points of interest, like Around Me and Foursquare. But the basic one is Look Around, and that's going to tell you the address that you're at, so I'll hit that.
Look Around.
There's another one called Where the Hell Am I?
/Cambridge.
See, it said it, 77.
Look Around. Near 59 Massachusetts Avenue /Net. Look Around. Nearest cross stream.
It says where they're 59.
Street, Massachusetts Avenue /Nass Avenue /Long today. Near Emma Street.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to find a Chinese restaurant from here, would you be able to use some kind of app?
I would use Around Me for that.
I'd use Around Me, and you can do categories, and you can do restaurants.
Yeah.
That's one thing to tell you. There are so many apps, and I want to mention one site that's really, it's in the on the Vibug page. People should go to a site called AppleVis, AppleVis.com, and that is a site that is specifically maintained and written by blind users who will give you their experiences with various apps.
And
they give reviews.
Add to
and
it
you can
well.
Add and write reviews of your own. So before you buy an app, you can like read the reviews of it.
Heytell, H-E-Y-T-E-L-L. It's kind of like a walkie-talkie kind of app, which is very useful if you don't want to use the phone or whatever. If you have somebody in your contact in Heytell, you can just, there's a hold and speak button, and you do exactly what that says, and you just make a comment. It gets sent to the person you've identified, and then they can Heytell you back. So that's a good way. For example, I was in an airport recently and trying to find somebody.
Yeah.
And it was great because I could just Heytell them because they had Heytell, and I could say, okay, I'm here, where are you? And then they told me where they were, and I said, okay, I'm going to walk down past the Starbucks, and you know, we met. It was great.
Amy, to use that, do you need to know their phone number or Heytell address?
Email, I think it's, what is it, email,
text,
phone
or
number, or text?
You basically, you have them. So Heytell works with both iOS devices like the iPad and iPod and iPhone, as well as Android. And one thing you need to set up Heytell and certain other apps is you need to have a contact in your contacts for yourself. So you would put your name, your phone number, and email address.
Oh.
And Heytell uses your contact list. So if you wanted to add somebody to Heytell, you'd have to have them in your contacts.
I might be.
So that's, I've got Heytell.
Yes, I am around if you still need someone to go and get Heytell.
Okay.
So it's running in the background. You hear how clear the messages are. It's much clearer, I think, than a phone conversation. It's basically sending the packets over either Wi-Fi or data. So
send a Heytell.
Select hold and speak.
So you have the primary button is, as Amy said, the hold and speak. And if you flick twice left.
I'm just kidding, LOL. If you need to show Heytell, it's fine. I'll be around for LOL.
So another person, Vicky in Florida, just so now if I click
left,
select
Vicky Cardona, Jim.
So that's who it's going to go to. So I'll do the hold and speak. And when it makes that little sound, which some of you could probably hear, that means it's beginning the transmission. So now we're recording a message that's going to be sent to Vicky in Florida. It doesn't use your phone minutes. Again, it's just using Wi-Fi or your data package. But the packets are pretty small because they're just audio files.
Done, message sent.
And when you lift your finger up, it says done and message sent.
Lindsay Mazzalino.
Now
check.
If we want to go to Lindsay, we
select.
Double tap
Lindsay
on her
Mazzalino.
Name.
Select Lindsay Mazzalino.
And then we
check.
Just
hold
verify.
And
so Lindsay, both Vicky and you responded pretty promptly to the demonstration request. And I'm going to tell them a bit about my sister's voicemail greeting. So my sister also has an iPhone, and she has on her voicemail greeting basically that if you want to talk to her, you should send her a Heytell rather than calling.
Oh.
We just find it so, because with a phone call, it rings, you kind of have to answer it right then, and it's kind of like going 75 miles an hour down the highway and having to stop. Whereas the Heytell, if I got a Heytell now and I was on the home screen, I would get a notification.
Here's my sister's voicemail greeting. What is significant about it?
Okay.
Her voicemail greeting basically, and I still have to listen to it, but it basically tells people to Heytell rather than call her.
I like Heytell. I don't love Heytell. Because what Heytell does is if you get a million messages a minute, the way Mika does, if his mailbox is full, sometimes you can't send a message, number one. And number two, it only lets you listen to the last message from somebody.
No,
so
you
if
can scroll back and go into the history.
Sometimes.
Yeah, when you get a lot of use, that you can have little bugs.
Yes, you can have lots of big bugs. Like you can only listen to the last. Like you can only. I mean, I like Heytell and I use it, but with all due fairness. I got a message from you, Mika, a few days ago, and I could only get the last message, even when I went back to the history, because, you know, you had to send multiple messages. And
yeah,
never did
the people who do actually have Heytell, that can be a good means of, you know, communication for certain things. It definitely makes, you know, it's nice in that, you know, it doesn't take the, you know, work of typing in a text message. It's very effortless.
Text.
Yeah.
Does it say, like, don't leave me a message or something?
The other thing you can do, if you have a group of, say, five friends, there's a premium feature for, say, 99 cents where you can set up a group and then send one message to all those people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is basically like the old Nextel phone stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Is Find My Friends similar or even usable by blind people?
Yeah, Find My Friends is new with iOS 5, and you have to register and allow a person to see your location, but then without you doing anything, if we were friends with Find My Friends, I could open the app and it would show me the address where you're located.
Will it tell you the address?
It will read it. Yeah, it's perfectly voiceover accessible. You can see where you are. You can temporarily allow people to see your location. You can ask Siri, like, where is Joe Smith? And it will look that up and find my friends. Mm-hmm. One trick I did find is normally with Find My Friends, you have to always enter your iCloud password if you haven't used it in the last, like, 30 minutes. But if you set a 4-digit passcode on the phone, then that will let Find My Friends always log in automatically.
But then you have to use the passcode to unlock the phone.
Right. And then also the Find My Friends, it can sort your friends by distance, so it will show the closest friends. So it's a little bit like Foursquare, except you don't have to check in. It just always knows where you are, and the friends that you've allowed can see that.
We probably talked about this at the beginning, but is Siri accessible generally?
It is accessible. It is buggy. It works better sometimes than other times. We did demonstrate it earlier.
It's a location-based sort of social networking, and also kind of you can search businesses and other venues that are around you. So that's if I want to know what restaurants or other types of places are around me, that's primarily what I use. You can also see what's trending, so you can see in Boston where the most people are checked in at. So, like, I'm checked in now to ViBug or to MIT. So my friends on Foursquare can see where I'm checked into.
If you really want people to know what you do and where you are at all times, those are the kinds of apps that you use.
You can also get good deals places. Like, if you check in at a restaurant, sometimes you can get coupons or, you know, special drink specials or whatever.
With Foursquare?
Yeah. Okay. So there are some advantages. I think there also are some risks, though.
Yeah.
And I just think you have to be mindful of those. So favorite apps. Somebody wants to know about favorite apps.
Oh, yeah.
There are so many. I'm sure we all have different ones. Mine probably are, let's see, the Money Reader, I love the podcast apps. I have three of them, iCatcher, Podcaster, and Downcast. I love the radio apps. I love Pandora and Ootunes. And I love AP Mobile, which gets a lot of news. I love the football app, that football radio app that allows me to listen to games. I liked the MLB at Bat app, but there's so many. I like Heytel and a bunch of the GPS apps. Other people. I like Store News. It tells you what's on sale in the app store.
But there's another one called Menu Pages that has menus for a lot of different restaurants that doesn't use OCR.
That's a different thing.
Do they have an iPhone app, Mika?
Yes, Menu Pages. Does.
Okay, because they're very... I use that on the PC all the time.
That's very nice.
Yeah. So,
it's updated pretty well. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it presents the menus in a very accessible, readable form.
Wow.
Whether I want the 32, the 16, the 32, like... Just to get a sense from people how much...
It depends upon what you want to use it for.
Okay.
So, for example, if you're a person who wants to take a lot of videos and pictures and so forth, then I would recommend the higher capacity. If you're a person who want to store tons of contacts and you store all of your email, your 5,000 email messages on there, you might want a higher number.
She's talking a lot, but for instance, I have the 32 gig before, and I only filled up like a third of it.
Yeah. I would say the only people who would need a 64 gig would be people who are taking a lot of pictures and stuff,
or music, or have
tons of music that they want to.
So then it's really between 16 and 32. Yeah.
But just as an example, I have enough music. I think it said it would play for 3 days straight.
Yeah, sure.
That took up about 6 gigs. I have 30 or 40 apps on there, maybe more. I have the 32 gig and it's only half full.
Yeah.
I would like to mention a few more apps that might be important, like Dropbox.
Dropbox. Yeah, I was going to ask about Dropbox. Yeah.
Dropbox and together with plain text, so you can just put write notes in your iPhone if you have a keyboard, and then it goes into Dropbox itself. I mean, it goes onto your computer, so you have basically access to. We would have to talk about Dropbox. But I want to mention that as one of my favorite apps. Mm-hmm. Also, something that comes with the iPhone and that is kind of hidden in the utilities is the voice recorder. And if I don't have a voice recorder with me, I put that on on the front first page of the iPhone. So I use it quite often, the iPhone voice recorder. It's called Voice Note.
There's also a recorder called Dropbox. It's then Dropbox.
And
when you record something, it automatically sends it to your Dropbox account.
Oh, cool.
And they recently made some accessibility improvements on that one.
Dropbox?
Vox.
Okay. And also for radio, I like TuneIn Radio, which lets you set buffers, so you can kind of sort of like, you know, stop a radio show and then listen to it later. And it has podcasts integrated in it. It basically does everything for me. I listen to Pandora. So
if you're listening to Pandora, for instance, is that taking phone minutes or is that just
data?
Data.
Takes data usage.
But if it's on Wi-Fi, it's not using
it. Right. If you're on Wi-Fi, it doesn't use anything. If you're on 3G, then it does. One thing to know, if you have Wi-Fi on and you're connected, it will show the Wi-Fi in your status bar. If it says just 3G and it doesn't have a Wi-Fi thing on, it means you're connected to 3G.
Which is not Wi-Fi,
right? That's what I'm saying. If the Wi-Fi is listed and it's connected, it'll show your Wi-Fi signal strength in the status bar, which is at the top of your phone. But if you're not, for example, I have a room in my house where I'm not connected to Wi-Fi because the Wi-Fi drops out. So then if I'm in that room, I'm using 3G.
Amy?
Yeah.
A couple of other apps. One is called Level Up, and basically you open it and there are businesses, stores and restaurants that accept Level Up as a form of payment. You open it up, you register your credit card with it, and then you just scan the code from your phone to pay at the restaurant. And one really neat thing is with using Level Up as a method of payment, you can select independently the amount of tip that you want to leave, and it will add that on your bill. And every restaurant that accepts Level Up or business, you get a discount the first time you use it that might be anywhere between like $2 and $20 off, and then you get a discount every when you spend, say, $200 at a business, you might get another $25.
Are there a good amount of restaurants that accept?
I was going to say, how widely
accepted? In the city, yeah. Another one is called Scout Mob, and it's an electronic coupon. So, for instance, right now there's a place in the North End where you can get a free waffle. Most of them are 50% off, but you can also, you know, once in a while there's one for 100% off.
How do you spell that?
Scout. And one other one that I just read about yesterday is called Uber Cab, and it's kind of like a taxi and car service, and when you open it up, it'll tell you how many minutes away the nearest car is. And actually, with the T shutting down the red line in Cambridge and Somerville this weekend and next weekend in those affected areas, they're offering free rides of up to $30 if you're going to or from an area where the T is shut down.
And that's N-E-W?
U-B-E-R.
Uber.
Uber.
There's no N in it. Uber Cab.
And you can also go on their website and sign up, and you can request the cars by text message or iOS or Android apps.
We should probably tell people how to delete apps. If you double-click and hold on an app, that puts you into an edit mode, Then if you double click, it'll ask if you want to delete it, and then you have to find the confirm button and double tap on that.
One app that I didn't mention, which it's, I think there's a little trouble with it with the new iOS 5. Some people have had mixed results, but I think they're working on it, which has been great. It's called VizWiz. Yeah. And VizWiz is an app where you take a picture of something, and then you can ask a question. And you hit a button, and you record your question. And then you web workers or can look it up on the internet, and they'll send you answers. Sometimes, and I've had trouble with this, they've got to work on it, because in the new iOS 5, if you do that, sometimes they don't hear your question. But it's pretty good. I used it one day. I had a document that wouldn't scan no matter what I tried, and I literally put it at the, I set it up in good lighting, and I said, what does the top of this say? And they were able to tell me.
Now that brings up a question. Is there any good document scanner app that somebody can recommend?
I've tried so many of them. I both the barcode scanner apps, and I've tried the document scanner apps, and I just have not found one that I think works well. Now maybe I'm just...
It depends on, I guess, what you want to do with it, but the idea that you can find a barcode easily with the iPhone camera is
a misnomer.
Right. It won't do it. Now, if you know about where the barcode is, then an app like Digitize will probably tell you what it is. But you might have an easier time using like VizWiz or what's the other one? Is Omobi still on?
Omobi.
Omobi.
O-M-O-B-Y.
And that will identify things using an automatic system. If it sees part of what you're asking it to identify, and it has that in its database, it will match it up and tell you what it is.
But I would not want to take a shopping bag full of groceries and have to use one of these apps to identify them. Because, the things that like the Omni has, all those the more expensive barcode readers have, is that they've got a camera that's omnidirectional.
It's a laser scanner, really, is what it is.
Yeah, and it's much more, you have to be much more precise with these. So I don't think we're there yet. There also is not, I don't think, a very successful way of using things like Excel spreadsheets and Word documents. There's something called Pages, but I've heard people having very limited success with that on the iPhone. It's a Mac thing.
Amy, two apps that I might mention. One is Consumer Reports has an app that I've used some for shopping. Put in, there are different categories, and I've used it in a month or so, so I can't remember exactly, but I think you can find the category of what you're looking for. Like we had to buy an electric lawnmower. So you got eventually to, I don't know, appliances, and then outdoor appliances, but it worked well. I was able with VoiceOver to get to what I wanted and found reviews on the couple of products I found in the store. The other one that I have struggled with a little bit, but boy, when it works, it's really great, is Google Voice Search, which has the conflict that maybe some other apps have with VoiceOver and the microphone that the app puts out there for you. So it works better with headphones, like some of these things. Yeah. But there's a voice search button. Once you open it and you hit the button, there's a little beep. You say your question, who won the Bruins game last night. As soon as it hears the half a second of silence, it beeps again. It makes a little noise while it's searching, and then it puts the answer on the screen. You have to flick around a little bit to get it, but I found it pretty easy to do.
I like the Read2Go app for people who are Bookshare members. I love the Audible app for people who are Audible.com users.
Google Translate is excellent. You can choose which voices you want to translate in. I think there's 50 or 60 choices. And the same as I described earlier with Google Voice Search, there's an easily found button. I can't remember exactly how it's labeled, but it's clear when you hear it. And then you hit it and you say what you want translated. It beeps again. And then there's another button you have to find that says text-to-speech, or it has some funny name like that. You hit that, and it gives it to you. And I used it in Italy this summer. It was fantastic.
And it shows a message to somebody on the screen?
Yep.
But it'll do that, too. It shows the message, but you can also hear it. I actually put something on my suitcase so that I could help get it identified when I got to Rome. And I couldn't remember how to say, I know Italian, but I couldn't remember how to say what it is that I put on my suitcase, so that I could describe it to the people in Rome. So on the flight over, I turned this thing on and said, you know, how do you, where is the cat collar? What I put on my suitcase. And it said it right back to me.
Maria, yeah, have you tried that with German?
I have, and yeah. I also tried it with Spanish, and it's a wonderful thing.
I use Speech Trans. Is that the same thing?
No.
This is actually called Google Translate.
Yeah.
What does Speech Trans do?
It does exactly the same thing. You can pick language, you can pick the from and the to language, and you can either speak something or type something, and it'll try to translate it.
One other enhancement in iOS 5 is now you're able to set up customized shortcuts if you want to type in a long string of information. So I just have one, but I'm starting them with a Q because that's relatively rarely used. So if I type QGM, it'll type in pikela@gmail.com. So I don't have to go to the other part of the keyboard with the at sign. You can set up these customized little shortcuts to fill in text in any edit box.
Yeah, I just started using that 2 days ago, and one useful purpose I found for that is I have a lot of professional jargon that I have to send on a regular basis as text messages to my colleagues, and boy, has that made it easier.
It's in keyboard settings.
It's in keyboard settings.
And you're basically adding things to the keyboard dictionary.
It's sort of like little macros, macro apps that you use.
I put ASAP, and it comes out with, thank you for your email, I'll get back to you as soon as possible, or something. There's an app called Handheld Birds, which is 100% voiceover friendly. It has something like 670 bird species in it. You can play the sounds, you can read a description of the bird, you can read about their habitat, and a number of other things. It works great. It has the table view, so you can quickly move through the alphabet. You can look them up by first name, last name, and a bunch of other things. But that brings us to another one called Shazam.
Yeah.
C-H-A-S-A-M, I think. It's a music program. If you're listening to a song on the radio, or even a live band, and you think, boy, I wish I knew what this song was, you can run this Shazam program, and more often than not, it'll find it, it'll tell you who it was recorded by, and it'll even give you the lyrics to it.
Another good app that I like when I'm out somewhere and got stuck with extra time and either didn't download podcasts or stuff, because sometimes you can't download the podcasts unless you're on a Wi-Fi network. I'll give a shout-out to the iBlink radio app, which has a lot of blindness-related podcasts and things. And it works pretty much, you know, over the cell data network, so it's pretty good. They really keep it up to date pretty well. iBlink Radio, letter I, I believe. It's the Cero tech people that put it out, and they have one for Android phones as well. But they do keep it up. It's the kind of app that if they ever decide, you know, not to keep it up, it'll be virtually useless in very short order. But
does it have all their various podcasts?
Yes, it has all their podcasts, but it has also a number of other ones. And you don't have to download them or anything. They do all the hunting for stuff and so on and so forth. So, for example, they have what's the guy that does all with my iPhone? Corey Ballard?
Corey Ballard.
Okay, so they have his little podcast up there. And he does little short bits on different applications or different programs and explains how to use them and so on. You can go to his All of My iPhone, and it's in the A's, so it's handy because it's near the beginning of the list. And once you go to that, then it lists his podcasts. And then you can just double tap on any one of the podcasts and it will start playing.
Can you get things like Tech Doctor and some of those?
Yes, I believe that they have pretty much any blindness related.
Can I download books and listen to them on my iPhone?
What kind of books?
How about NLS Bard?
No, not right now. They supposedly are going to come up with an iPhone app, but it could take them 5 years or so. Who knows?
Audible.com if you have a subscription, yes. Bookshare if you have a subscription, yes. The iBooks app is accessible. You can buy books and download those and read them using VoiceOver.
Learning Ally.
Learning Ally, formerly RFB&B, has an app. You can download and listen to their books.
If somebody tells me, a blind person, they have an Android phone, but is there a way to make that reasonably accessible?
It depends upon the phone and it depends upon what you want to do. There is a show that is on the Saratalk podcast that you can get from iBlink Radio called That Android Show. Mm-hmm. And it talks about Android accessibility for blind people. There are some blind people using Android phones. The trick with that is that every implementation of Android is different. So it may vary by phone, vary by carrier, and by what version of Android it's using. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a little more complex, but I do know of some people using Android phones. Mm-hmm. But I think even they would say it depends upon what you want to do. The Android allows for some things that Apple does not. I mean, for example, they can walk out the door and it automatically disables their Wi-Fi, you know, so they don't have to worry about shutting it off, just as an example. There are things they can do that you can't do on an iPhone, but I would say it's much more labor intensive and not as many things are going to be accessible. But there is, as I say, this show called That Android Show on iBlink Radio, which I would refer people to.
So you always have to be thinking about if you're in a Wi-Fi and if you're not, and when you should shut it off and when you shouldn't?
Say you're connected to Wi-Fi.
Yep.
Right. And you leave home, because it's going to still try to connect to your network and search for Wi-Fi networks and so forth.
So when I leave home, I turn
my Wi-Fi off. That way it conserves battery life. Yeah.
If you have an iPhone...
I would say, I mean, I don't know, I think it varies depending on so many conditions. Do you have notifications on? Do you have
Bluetooth
on? Do you have all sorts of things on? If I'm really using it and I'm using multiple apps and I got everything, the universe turned on so that the thing should practically be glowing in the dark, then maybe 8-9 hours. Oh, yeah, the screen curtain, there's two ways of diminishing that. You can turn the screen curtain on, which will use up less battery, and that makes a difference. Or you can turn your brightness down to zero.
I have a question.
But if you're going to have an iPhone, you pretty much have to charge it every day.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that's just a habit you have to get into. Because if you don't, the second day, you're going to wind up without your phone.
Exactly. Now, do people know about Juice Pack?
Oh, Moby Juice Pack?
Yeah, I've got one here.
What is it?
And it got me through the day or so we lost of power last week. It's a little plastic piece, maybe 2 by 3 inches. You charge it through a USB, and you can charge it in a bunch of different ways from your computer, from the wall. And then it holds a number of charges for your phone. You just plug it. It has the same kind of plug that the cord does. You plug it right into your phone. It charges it pretty quickly. Maybe, I don't know, I haven't timed it, but 45 minutes or an hour, you might get pretty much a full charge. It also has a flashlight on it, if you want to use it, I guess. And it'll, as I say, charge your phone a few times. Again, I haven't maxed it out, but it's something I carry around in my Braille Note case pocket. And if I run out of battery on the iPhone, I just plug it into that.
Can you buy it if you have an OtterBox case?
I bought it from Apple.
I have another one called the Power Skin, and you can put the iPhone in, and it's kind of like a case, and it has a battery in it, so it gives you about double the battery.
And I have a Moby Juice Pack battery case, which is similar to what Paul talks about, except it's actually a case with a battery built in.
And I have yet a different one. I can't remember what it's called, but it's got a USB plug that's on a little rubbery cable, and then it has the iPhone dock on the other end of it. I forget what that's called, but none of them seem to work very well with an OtterBox case.
No, nothing works well with an OtterBox case because it's very protective, so you've got to take it out of there. Then.
But I have a solution for that, which is an iPod dock extender, which is just a little device which I can show if anybody wants to see it. You can buy extenders. You can also buy iPod dock extender cables. And I want to mention another app which may be of interest to some people. It's called ICE, which stands for In Case of Emergency. And it lets you enter various contacts and the order that you'd like them to be called in if they find you dead and your iPhone's still working or something. And it also, you can list your medications, you can list your allergies. I have a regular Apple keyboard and I love it, but I found that the longer I had it, the less I used it because the better I got at actually typing on the phone. You have to weigh the portability.
You know, if I'm going to be typing a lot of stuff, I want a keyboard. If I'm going to be typing just, you know, 2 or 3 sentences, then I'll just use the regular keyboard on the screen, and I will use the touch typing.
The 4S also has, in any edit box you're in, there's a dictate button. So it's different than Siri. Just any place you can hit dictate and speak something.
So it's like dragging dictate.
Kind of, yeah.
If the phone is locked and when I'm using an Apple Bluetooth, or I'm at any QWERTY Bluetooth keyboard, I could unlock the phone directly from the keyboard. However, if I'm using a Braille keyboard or a display and the phone is locked, I actually have to go to the phone and unlock the phone before I use it. There's a solution to that?
I know of no workaround.
No workaround. Okay.
Well, if you have an email and you're dictating it through Siri and it writes it up for you, first of all, can you hear what it says before you send it? And second of all, if there's an issue with any of the wording or sentences, is there a way to go in and edit that?
You can, it says you can review, edit, or change it. I have not played with that with Siri, because I haven't sent a lot of email with Siri.
If it's a short, you can just say change, but you might have to dictate
the whole thing again.
Okay. In general, is Siri really useful, or is it something to play with?
It depends. It's both. I think if it's working well, I do like it for text messages, because it really gets me angry that my daughter can text message so much faster than I'll ever be able to breathe, for God's sake. Do I use it for every little thing? No. I'm not a person who generally likes to talk to my phone.
You can also, if you don't have Siri, and I'm not going to get Siri for myself until I guess the next phone comes out, you can always use drag and dictate and text and email with that. So that
it's
works
pretty good.
I've been trying to pair it with the Apex, and I've had no success. And I called HumanWare, and they told me I wasn't typing in the PIN fast enough, and I think I was, and I had someone else who was more experienced try to do it, and he couldn't pair it.
So I can give you sort of a half a loaf answer, because I had the same problem, and I called HumanWare, and I finally found someone who was pretty helpful and understood.
Wow.
The issue was not just typing in the PIN fast enough, but you had to do something that I wasn't familiar with. I thought you'd have to just go in your options menu to connectivity and pair that way. You also have to go to another part of the main menu on the Apex called Terminal.
Yeah, I did that.
You did that?
I did, yeah.
Because that was a problem with mine, and I did get it to work. I don't use it very often, but it does pair now. So.
There's another thing. After you put that PIN in, isn't there a pair button that you have to hit?
Yeah.
And I didn't know that at first.
On the iPhone?
Yeah.
Is it possible to delete all your emails at once?
To delete them all at once?
No.
I mean, you could delete the mail account, and that would probably erase it.
That's what you have to do. That's what a friend of mine does. You delete the account, and then you recreate it, and then all of your email is gone.
When you get your iPhone in the box, just out of the box, does it have an email client built in? Then you just put in your account and your password, and then it automatically syncs up with your Comcast account or whatever.
No. It doesn't automatically sync up unless you tell it to. You can either have it, you have your email come down automatically or come down or do it manually. If you download it first on the phone and then you delete it from the phone, you can get it not to download to your computer the next time you download messages.
But that's different. If you have an Exchange account and you delete the message from your office at work, it'll delete it from your phone.
Right.
And if you do use IMAP as well, it'll do that.
Right.
Like Gmail or Yahoo.
No, I know that. Yeah.
Settings. Practice voiceover gestures, commands, and typing in this area. Select the Done button in the top right corner and double tap to exit. Voiceover practice, heading.
So if I, for instance, click right.
Done, but practice voiceover gest, click right, move to next item.
It tells what it is. If I click down.
Click down, move to next item using rotor setting. Click left, move to previous item.
I'll do something like a two-finger double tap.
Two finger double tap. Start and stop the current action. For example, answers and hangs up a telephone call. Starts and stops playback of music and video. Starts and stops the stopwatch. Starts and stops video recording. Takes a picture in camera. Starts and stops voice memo recording. Pauses and resumes voicemail message playback. Stops custom voicemail greeting recording.
But the reason
it's
why
a good resource,
the reason why it's also helpful though is because sometimes you think you're doing one thing and the phone is interpreting it another way. So it teaches you how to actually use the phone. So because for example, if you put your fingers too close together and you do a double something, it may interpret it as a single something. You know what I mean? Or more like a one finger as opposed to a two finger. Sometimes you have to spread your fingers a bit. Like if you're answering a phone call and you're using the two finger method, you have to spread your fingers a little bit.
You know, another good example of that, Amy, that's a really good point, is like, what's a scrub? A scrub might be different things to different people. And there's one that to find the back button, you can do a scrub. Well, I didn't know what they meant. And what it does mean specifically is that you have to go right, left, and then right. You can't do it the other way. Mm-hmm. And the only way you're going to know that is if you have it tell you that you've just done a scrub.
And is that with one or two fingers?
Two.
Flip left, flip right. Yeah. Room to two fingers crossed. Activates the back button is present.
Now, the first time he did it, it didn't work right. See, that's what I mean. That's how, like, I was making mistakes with certain gestures, like the pinch gesture. I couldn't get to save my soul. Do a pinch, Mika.
Pinch close. Unselect text. Pinch open. Select text.
So the pinch gesture, it's like pinching something or...
So you're taking two fingers and then pushing them apart to open the pinch and
pushing them together to close the pinch. But I had a hard time with that one. And the voiceover practice helped me to perfect it.
Do a two-finger triple tap bigger.
Two-finger triple tap. Item chooser.
And then there's a like three-finger double tap that does something else.
Toggle speech on and off.
Toggle speech on and off. Doesn't shut off voiceover, but toggle speech on and off.
Two-finger tap and hold should tell you that it changes the labels.
Two-finger double tap and hold. Set custom label. Touch. Select item under your finger.
Do sighted people need to learn all these?
No.
It's different, sort of. And the other thing is, if you give your phone with voiceover to a sighted person, they'll be completely lost.
But that's the advantage of the triple click home. Only if you are upgraded to the iOS 5, only does this work automatically. In the previous versions, you have to set it up. But in the iOS 5, if you hit triple click home, it shuts voiceover off, and then sighted people can play with the phone. And then you hit triple click home again, and automatically voiceover will come back.
Let's make sure people know what that means. That means you hit the home button three times fast.
Quickly.
Right. My kids got iPhones after I did, and it was so cool because for the first time in my life, I could teach them the iPhone. You know, we were on the same platform. I might do it a different way, but I could still describe it. And the other thing that iPhone, I think, is really good with is spatial orientation. You know, once you know, you can almost do it by what they call muscle memory. Mm-hmm. Once you know where something is on the screen and you use a program often enough, you don't have to search around, flick, do anything. You just put your finger there and you're there. Yeah. Because you're so accustomed to it, and it's the same place on the screen in that program every single time.
A good example of that's the telephone keypad.
Listen, Amy, can you or somebody say something about the distinction between turning off speech and leaving voiceover on? Are there certain prompts that will still give you? If you turn speech off and voiceover is on, what does that technically mean?
It means you still have to do the voiceover gestures, but you don't hear anything.
But it won't talk at all? No.
Correct.
Well, voiceover won't talk.
Other apps might talk.
If you have the screen curtain on and you shut down your phone and turn it back on, is the screen curtain still on?
Yes. Yeah. Anybody want a real trick, and it's the only trick I found so far, to make sure your phone is actually... You know when you turn your phone on and you don't know whether you've really held in the button long enough? And of course, sighted people see the logo and all that, so they know the phone is turning on. The only way I've been able to deal with that is to use the mute button.
Yeah.
I have vibrate turned on, and if I use the mute button and move it, it will vibrate, and that will tell me that my phone is on.
Oh.
That's also a good way, if you think you've crashed VoiceOver or you've done something, to know whether your phone needs to be reset or whether you just have to try to re-enable VoiceOver. The mute button, which is, as you're with the phone facing you, it's on the left-hand side of the phone, right above the two brown volume buttons. Mm-hmm. It's like a little bar. And if you move it away from you, move that away from you, it'll say muted or unmuted.
Muted.
And that, and it also vibrates if you have vibrate turned on in your settings, which I do.
So that will give you that feedback immediately after you do the 3 second push down?
If I, it takes a little longer than 3 seconds, but it will tell me. Yes, it will come on.
And I would also like to bring up the cold reset, which I have had to use twice over this year. And the iPhone was totally not doing anything. I couldn't do absolutely anything. And then what you have to do is hit the hold, press and hold the home button and the lock button.
At the same time?
Yeah.
At the same time. And you hold it long enough, because I didn't do that at some point.
10 seconds.
Right. Yeah. And I, but then that.
And what does it do? It essentially restarts.
It's not a reboot. It's not even like a reboot.
You don't have to do it often, but you have to know these things, because if it happens, then, you know.
Yeah. There's another reboot. It's not a reboot. I think it's power button and volume down, and that puts your phone into recovery mode, and that will reset your phone.
What is that?
Erases your files?
Yeah, that does.
Oh, I wouldn't do that.
I believe it's power button and volume down.
You can do a quick reboot by hitting the lock button, I don't know, five or six times quickly.
Ten times.
I thought it was
rapid succession.
When I have to call my voicemail at work, I have to dial the number, like, if I'm not, you know, at work, I've got to call from outside. And then it asks you to hit pound, and then you have to put in your phone number. Then you have to pound again, and then you have to put in your code. Is there a way to actually have it all set up, like in your favorites, or do you have to actually manually?
But you could also put in the commas, like we talked about earlier, and have it put in all the numbers and everything in sequence.
If you go into a contact that has that voicemail number in it, you might type something like the phone number, then comma, then pound, then comma, then your PIN code, and then pound again, or whatever it requires.
You just have to figure out the sequence.
And if you do it all right, it works perfectly.
So it takes two commas?
Well, it depends.
On your phone.
Each one is 2.5 seconds.
Have to practice. You have to figure out.
I have a Perkins voicemail from when I work at Perkins, and it just goes in automatically, puts in my phone number and my PIN code. The downside to it is I don't remember any of that stuff anymore, because it's in there.
By the way, Starbucks has a similar app where you can, if you have money on your card, you register your card in your Starbucks app, and I just have it scanned in, and it takes it automatically, and it tells you what my balance is.
What's a good calendar?
The only one I know how to use. I think it's easy once you know how to use it, but it took me a while to figure it out, because when you open the calendar, you have to actually single tap somewhere in the middle of the screen to get it on today. And if you don't know to do that, I struggled with it for a while. Then you can start right flicking to move forward through the dates and events.
If you have it set to month view, you could actually put your finger down, and month view is like a wall calendar with Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then the week's over, and you just move around as if you move around the wall calendar. And when you get to the day beyond, you just lift off and double tap.
I always use the list.
List is a little tough.
Month
is a little bit easier.
With the month view, the days are just in a list up the screen?
Well, it's visually, if you looked at it visually, it'd be like a wall calendar.
It's horizontal.
Well, it's in a horizontal invert. It's a grid, because a wall calendar is 7 days wide by however many weeks in a month. So it would be like, say, 31 boxes.
I got you.
It's interesting, though, because I think what you're demonstrating also, Frank, is you've seen before.
So
I think you understand that spatially, where somebody who is congenitally blind might not immediately think to go to the month view for that reason. They would think of the list. But actually, the month view is more user-friendly in a lot of ways.
If I'm on month view and I go to a date and I want to view the events on that date, what do I have to do?
Double tap the date you want, and all your events will be right at the bottom of the screen.
Oh, okay. And the month view is still in the upper part of the screen, so you can.
It's still up there, yes.
Yeah.
I have over 100 apps on my phone, and I have them all on 2 pages. And the way I've done that is creating folders. And I have all my folders in alphabetical order, so they're easy to find. And I have, the way you do this is if you want to put 2 apps together, you basically double tap and hold, and then you move, it'll say moving something, whatever app you're on, and then it will move it around on the screen. And actually, iOS 5 has done a good job. They've now made, given you a lot more feedback as to where you're moving it to. And it will create a folder if you put one app on top of the other. You can then edit the name if you want to. Or you can, like, I have, for example, I have a sports folder, and I have 12 apps in it. I have a communication folder. I have 10 apps in it. You know, so it just allows you to group your apps together, and I only have 2 pages to search through. So I don't have to search through 11 pages of apps.
Put it in one folder.
You can only put 12 apps in a folder.
16 on a page.
16 on a page. The dock. People know what the dock is?
Nope. Yeah,
the dock is at the bottom of your, the bottom of the screen. There are 4 apps which come in the dock. And I don't know what the default ones are because I've changed mine so long ago. But there are 4 across the bottom. I wanted different apps. And I wanted different things in the bottom. So I moved those to the dock. And the dock are the it's just easy to find them. They're just always at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah.
I also found out that once you have created a folder, you can also put that in the dock. You have to create the folder first outside the dock. But you can put a folder in the dock.
And then it removes one of the 4 and put
then
it
then it will remove, yes, it will remove one of the 4 things you already have in there. There are apps I never use that come standard on the phone. I created an unused folder. And I put all those apps that I'll never use in that folder. And that gets them out of the way. It still means they're available. I haven't deleted them or anything. But it just means that I don't have to be bothered with them.
Delete the apps, and they will still be in the app store for you, as purchased.
Right.
For purchase apps, not for stuff, the ones that
are...
The default ones?
The default ones you can't delete.
That's correct. But the purchase ones.
The other thing you can do for your home screen, if there are web pages that you use a lot, you can put links to your web pages on the home screen. Mm.
Although Siri doesn't natively open up apps, a lot of them have URL shortcuts to different parts within the app. So you can set up basically a contact and get Siri to do a little bit more than it normally would. There might be like Facebook, and then you can open up, say, your notifications via one URL.
Yeah.
No, Arthur, you've mentioned Facebook a couple times. I have Facebook on my iPhone, and when the last update, whatever it was, it screwed it up. Like, a lot of the buttons I can't do anything with.
Yeah, it is harder to use.
It was much better.
Okay, so is there anybody?
I mean, you can still sort of use it, but it's...
Oh, I use it as I... Yeah.
I use 3 or 4 different apps for Facebook because each one of them does one thing better than another.
Okay.
I use Focus for Facebook if I just want to read stuff because it'll put the person's name and their remarks on the same line.
Mm-hmm.
So I
don't
have to do all that extra tapping. And then I use AIM sometimes, too. I don't know what the advantages of it are. I just have it there. No, you can read your Facebook entries on AIM.
Oh, okay.
I actually do that on my computer, too, at home. I find that easier than using Facebook.
This brings up something that I want to mention for those, because we have some new people here today. This would be a good use if you are members for the ViBug member support list. Or you could shoot an email to the ViBug member support list if you're signed up, and you say, okay, this happened on my iPhone, and I don't know what to do. And one of us who've used the iPhone can respond to you and give you some feedback or some direction as to where to go for information.
Amy, what is the member fee?
$20 a year. If you're in Oklahoma and you're online, we can set you up. We'll give you an online password, and you log into the online chat room.
Okay, so if I give you a check today, that's what you would do?
Yep.
There also are a couple of iPhone, blind iPhone user lists that you could...
And they're all listed in that iPhone resources link off the ViBug webpage. And there are 3 iPhone group user lists. I used to be on all 3. I'm now on 1. Mm-hmm. The only thing I will say about them, even the one that I think is the best moderated, especially when the new iPhone came out, you get 300 messages a day.
Bluetooth headsets, one that's the best to get, or one...
They have to be A and B.
A2DP.
A2DP compatible. So when you're buying a headset, make sure it's that.
That's just a protocol.
Yeah. People have different ones. If you want a single earpiece or you want a full headset. For
also
two,
how you want it to fit.
And how you want it to fit, yeah.
I use a Plantronics Voyager 855, which I like a lot because... as it goes. The volume tends to be a little bit less, I find, with Bluetooth than corded earpieces. And if I'm on the bus and it's a little bit noisy, listening to Newsline or something like that, I want to get a little volume. So getting something that goes in my ear, like not an earbud that sits on your ear, but something that goes in, I find it better. So that's what I have. I mean, there's Blue Ant.
Well, thank you. I have a Blue Ant Q2, and I like that. That's a one ear. The only thing I'll say about Bluetooth in general is that one thing is there is a delay. So if you're typing and so forth, it is a bit of a delay with some of the Bluetooth-enabled headsets. But I have a Blue Ant Q2 that it's pretty easy to set up, and it has voice guidance even to set it up. And then they have different cushions that you can attach to the earpieces. You're not just stuck with the little ones that are on the... And it has a clip that you can put over your ear, which I took off because I found that annoying.
I bought a Bluetooth headset because I was going to be taking a trip on an airplane, and I discovered you can't use it when you're in airplane mode, which is so obvious, I just didn't think of it.
Yeah.
But what exactly does airplane mode do?
It turns off all transmissions from your phone.
Yep.
So it leaves it basically working as an iPod, and you can use any app that doesn't require you to transmit or receive anything from elsewhere.
Yeah, so you can use it if you have Read to Go or Audible or whatever, but you can't use it to send your email. And
if you think you've downloaded something and you're not sure, I recommend before you fly, put airplane mode on and try it, because I thought I had a bunch of podcasts on my phone. And when I went into airplane mode, they were gone. So they had not really been downloaded. Yeah. I must have been streaming them or something. And so that was a rude awakening.
What do people think about weather apps? I would like to find one that has a bit more information than the one that comes with the phone.
I haven't found any that I thought were great, but I do have AccuWeather on there because it tells sunrise and sunset and a few things like that, but I haven't found any that I was all that impressed with.
The new iOS actually uses location services for example, it tells me that my one of my weather cities is now Medford because it knows I'm in Medford.
Right.
So that's kind of interesting.
It still doesn't give you a whole lot of information.
No, it doesn't. No.
But so AccuWeather,
I think there's one called Weather Alert USA.
Yeah.
There's also some that do the weather radio.
Yeah.
When I was setting up my phone, before I activated VoiceOver, I got too far into one of the layers. It asked me the following questions. Did I want to receive my email manually or other? Did I want to receive it hourly updates or in the morning or the evening? And I thought, well, of course, hourly would be better than once a day. And so now when I power off my phone in the evening and I plug it in to be recharged, I'm getting awakened in the middle of beep, 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 and I have no idea how to find those settings. I have searched to turn them back off.
After you plug it up at night, you can turn your phone off at that time.
Every time you plug it in,
your phone is going to turn on no matter what.
After you turn it off.
But if you want to find those settings,
yes.
You go into settings,
yep.
And then after you get past general, there's one that says something about email.
Contacts, mail,
calendar.
And calendars, yeah. I believe it says.
Contacts, mail, and calendar.
I believe that's what it says.
If you go in there.
The iPhone stuff is very customizable.
Yeah.
It's worth poking around a bit in the settings to find stuff, and it's amazing what's in there.
Yeah. A lot of times when you put a new app in, you'll find that app listed in the settings menu also with stuff that you
want. Or you can customize how it operates and what it does.
I have Bluetooth-enabled hearing aids, and is that compatible with the iPhone 4S, which I just got?
I don't know. Is it discoverable?
I thought I found something in print that said it was.
I bet it depends on which hearing aids.
Or which Bluetooth you had.
Where I can mute it, but listen to it through my hearing aids.